Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
You there, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Wow. All righty. Good stuff. This is the Over the Monster podcast. It started as soon as you picked up the phone, man.
Wonderful.
I don't even have a beer.
That's not good.
No, I'm right next to the kitchen. So I'm gonna get a beer. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Things are good. I'm heading to Florida this weekend, and it's not going to be snowing there, and that's going to be good.
You're in D.C., right?
Yes. Yeah.
Are you getting snow in D.C.?
Apparently, we're supposed to on Saturday, although we have avoided most of the calamity that has hit the Northeast. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, we've been lucky.
Sorry, I'm sending out a tweet, but it's got an exclamation point, which drives me nuts. I thought we would talk about the Red Sox minor league system, which is why I have the excellent Chris Hatfield here from Sox Prospects. This is Matt Corey, by the way. So I'm just going to go right into it, Chris. So apologies.
Let's do it.
But by go right into it, I mean first I'm going to walk into the other room and get a beer. So just a second.
How about we both do it and we race? Let's race.
All right.
I'll race.
Ready?
Ready?
New mark?
Ready? Go.
Set. Go.
Go.
I'm back. Let's see if Chris is here yet. Chris?
Time.
Oh.
Hi. Did you beat me?
Good work. Just by a second.
I've got a dead guy. I was saving it just for you.
what are you drinking?
A dead guy. A rogue dead guy.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
No, I'm not saying there's a dead person in my apartment that I killed for you. That would be much weirder.
That would be much weirder. I mean, I would be honored. Mm. Boy, this has gone bad.
No, I didn't think this was that kind of party.
No, it's not. That's a different kind of party.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a s'more stout, which does not have s'mores in it, but is a good stout, local Oregon brewery.
Sounds good.
In fact, if you go to the brewery and you order a s'more stout, they will get out a little blowtorch and torch a marshmallow and put it on your rim, which is a...
That sounds wonderful.
I know, right? They have other beers, which I would typically order over their stout, but I've ordered the stout multiple times just because of the showmanship involved in ordering it. So.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right.
I like the tap head thing.
Sorry?
So, yeah. Anyway. No, I was just talking about why I first ordered a Rogue Dead Guy, because I liked the tap
handle.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So,
you cut out there for a second, so I missed the beginning of that. But yeah. Yes, I think it was the name that first attracted me as well. I was I'm a sucker for good marketing. I hate marketing, but I'm a sucker for it.
Yes.
So let's start with where the Sox are. Actually, Mark Normandin wrote an interesting piece at Over the Monster about some guys who are blocked in the system. And he mentioned Garen Caccini, and I'm trying to pull the piece up now while I'm slowly remembering the names. Who else?
Well, some other names that perhaps he said might have been Devin Marrero.
Yes, Marrero.
Jackie Bradley Jr.
Uh-huh.
And Sean Coyle and the rest.
Yes, I think you nailed it, man. Did you write this article?
I have it up right now.
Oh, okay.
I did see it also, though.
So I think we'll get to the 101 prospect list that just came out and where you guys are at Sox Prospects in a second. But I think this is an interesting starting point because we've been hearing so much about you know, the trades that the Red Sox quote unquote should make, you know, and, mm-hmm. and the prospects that are, you know, overflowing out of the cupboard, out of the minor league system. And are you in line with the idea that, that Xander Bogaerts can be a, you know, a full-time major league shortstop for, we'll say, multiple years, as in two or more. And I don't know if anyone knows the answer to this, but I'll ask you anyway, and that Rusney Castillo can be a starting center fielder at the major league level, which those two things would cause the blockage, so to speak, of Jackie Bradley and Devin Marrero.
Sure. Yeah, well, let me start with Rusney Castillo, because I think I'm kind of like you in that I couldn't tell you. I'll be perfectly honest. I have seen him play very little. I moved last August down here out of Nesson's viewing area and did not have MLB TV. So I did not get to see him play very much at all when he was up in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say that I have a reason to believe he can't.
Right.
Major league center field, and he's certainly been paid sight unseen and is more or less, it almost seems, being handed center field with the way, you know, things have been discussed, or at least center or right. We'll see how it shakes out, but
yeah.
We can get more into that later. But I have no reason to think he can't. I know at least Alex Cora seems to be glowing about him.
Yeah.
Cora was his manager in Puerto Rico this winter, and he's almost become like the Rusney Castillo PR guy, essentially, with everything he's been, with the way he's been pumping him on his own Twitter and in the media and things like that. So I see no reason to think can't. As for Bogaerts, I do think he can definitely stick at shortstop in the major leagues. I think, you know, Kylie McDaniel over at Fangraphs had a piece earlier this, I think it was him at least, about evaluating minor league shortstops and about how it seems like guys either get put box of they were very good defensive shortstop or that they're going to have to move.
It
seems like it's kind of almost you wind up with this bimodal sort of thing. There's no, he will be an adequate shortstop, which is what Bogaerts could be.
Yeah.
He's never going to win a gold glove. You know, he may be a little below average, but a little below average is still one of the 20 best shortstops in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you don't need him to be the second coming of Andrelton Simmons, you know.
Right.
That said, you know, Marrero, when you watch him play shortstop, you know, I am pretty sure literally, in the literal sense of the word, every time I've seen him play, he's made a highlight reel play at shortstop every game I've been to that he's been playing in.
Yeah.
Either a dive into the hole or a dive up the middle or some kind of incredibly rangy catch of a pop-up. He can pick, but can he hit? That said, I could see a situation maybe a year down the road, should circumstances arise, where maybe things get moved around and perhaps you move Bogaerts to third and bring Marrero up to play short because that's the best alignment they use the Boston Red Sox can field. So, you know, I think Marrero is maybe a little less blocked in that sense, but I have a hard time seeing a starting lineup in the next 5 years that doesn't include, or maybe at least next 3 years that doesn't include Xander Bogaerts in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I think one of the sort of undersold aspects of you know, the offseason moves that that the Red Sox have made is that, you know, they sort of shut out Garin Caccini. They've also locked themselves in to Bogaerts, at least for a year. You know, there's really no other place he can go. I mean, Mark mentioned in the piece that, you know, maybe at some point next year you would, you know, being 2016, you would see Bogaerts end up at first base. That seems kind of, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say that seems like a waste, but it seems like a waste. You know, not that Bogaerts is an amazing defensive specimen, but you can move him farther down the defensive spectrum than that, except that you can't because there's nobody else. There's no other place really to put him. I mean, maybe you'd put him in left and move Hanley to first, and then you're like, huh?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's a question at the end of this rambling, but it is quite quite the commitment that they made.
Yeah, I agree. I I absolutely agree with that whole everything you said there. I do think it's also gotten underplayed the way that, you know, especially with Cecchini, because he also played some left field last year, and
left field
and third base are the two positions this year, other than maybe second, and I guess first base because Napoli, that have the most certainty coming into the year of going to be there, you know? And so, you know, they completely blocked off Cecchini.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you can at least see some light at the end of the tunnel for Marrero having an opportunity. It'll be interesting. The thing with Hanley moving to first is then are you really going to ask him to learn a new position for the second time in 2 years? You know, that's part of why I can't really see that happening, but who knows? You know, and there's also the what are they going to do with the DH spot when Ortiz eventually retires.
Right.
I could see them moving to more of a rotating DH sort of situation where, you know, the Hanley DH is a couple times a week. Napoli or whoever is at first DH is a couple times a week. You know, a guy who's dinged up maybe gets a couple of games a week at DH and maybe becomes a lot more fluid. You know, maybe Swihart DH is once a week or twice a week with if you have both him and Vasquez or something. So the weird thing with the way that they have set things up this year and with what they have in the minors is that I can't remember a situation in which the lineup for the year after the coming year was so in question. I mean, is there a single position other than second base that you're confident you definitely know the starter? You know?
Yeah, it's no, weird. Not at all. I mean, you could say Vasquez at catcher, but there's Swihart there.
Swihart.
You know, yeah, no, that's a great. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe the guy on that list below Pedroia in the certainty department would probably be Bogarts. I mean, like you said, he's going to play somewhere.
Right.
They've locked third base, which is sort of the natural moving position off of short. They've locked that up so he can't go there. And the other, you know, normal place you'd stick someone who is a third baseman, but there's no space for them is left field. You know, you're certainly not going to play Bogarts in center. That's insane. And you're not going to play him in right field at Fenway either. He's not a catcher.
Nope.
He's not going to play second base. So that leaves first base or, like you said, DH. They're paying the man 22 point something million. I don't know if that enters into it. I mean, they're locked into him one way or the other at this point. But you'd like to get a little more than just, you know, just the offense out of him. I mean, the idea that you can play him and a guy like Napoli at the same time, you know, that's included in that money. But if you put him at first base, then all of a sudden, you know, no.
It's less valuable.
Right.
The bat is less valuable at that position because you can't, you know, you're going to get a left fielder who needs to be a little bit better defensively than, you know, instead of playing the first baseman, like you said. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how that works out down the road.
Are there guys that in the system that you think, I don't know how to say this without using the word overvalued, which I don't want to use, but where the public perception of their skills is probably, you know, above what their skills actually are? Like, do you think that, you know, Red Sox fans and possibly even the Red Sox are overrating a guy like Blake Swihart or a guy like Henry Owens or anybody else? I'll leave it open to you.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Owens was the guy who came to mind, but he comes to mind as a guy who a year ago would have fit that, but who now it's like he's either over or underrated. I think the backlash that has hit of like the people, including probably myself, beating back against the like, no, he is not going to be an ace.
Right.
He's not a future number one, like unless he, you know, something crazy happens with his development, which, you know, the example I always come back to is Jonathan Papelbon's second most effective pitch in the major leagues has been his splitter, which he learned in AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Which you don't project someone to learn their second best pitch in AAA. Like that's not something you can reasonably project. So who knows? Maybe he learned cutter and it turns into like John Lester's cutter and suddenly he's got ace stuff. So Owens is a guy, you know, he pitches above his stuff and guys who do that tend to be the guys who are maybe overrated a little bit. But I think the book is out on him now among at least most of the Red Sox fans that I see on what he can be. There are still some who get the, like, oh, the Red Sox think he's untradeable. Like, I remember that narrative came up
right
last year for some reason that Henry Owens was untradeable, which I strongly disagree. But yeah, especially, you know, with certain players who may be getting discussed right now, I think he'd be a great fit to, in a certain trade
yeah
that I won't get into right now, but maybe we will. Who knows? But you know, I think he's going to be a very good major league starter. You know, I know you guys have talked about here on the podcast before is that there's nothing wrong at all with a number three pitcher. That is a very, very valuable guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the top, you know, 100 and some, I don't know, let's see, three times 90. So top 100 pitchers in the world.
Yeah.
You know, that's a valuable guy. And he'll be that for them in theory. You know, you've got, in theory, at least Masterson's rotation slot open up next year. Porcello's rotation spot potentially opens up next year. And I don't think Joe Kelly has a stranglehold on a rotation spot next year by any stretch of the imagination. And Buchholz technically, he technically has a team option, right? So,
yeah, he's
I think it gets picked up.
So, yeah.
I think it gets picked up. I have a hard time seeing it not getting picked up, but you know, it could potentially not if he goes and completely stinks the place out this year. So there is opportunity there, and I think he could be a very valuable member of the staff next year. But as far as overrated, I don't know. People always ask about Bryce Brentz, and I think that ship has kind of sailed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a guy that I got asked about earlier today on a radio hit. Not to kind of, you know, toot my own horn here or anything, but got asked about essentially being blocked and thus trade material. And it's just kind of like, well, as third or fourth guy deal maybe, but, you know, you're not building a trade around Bryce Brentz.
not unless, you know, you're trading for a quad A outfielder, which,
right. Right. You're trading him for a different AAA depth, which is what he kind of is at this point.
Yeah.
And maybe he could be more, but he's not going to get that opportunity with Boston, and no team is going to go out and get Bryce Brentz.
Right.
So maybe him a little bit, but I think the hype on Swihart is good. I think maybe people might be overvaluing Swihart's bat and undervaluing his defense. It's not like he's Ryan LaVarnway here or anything.
Yeah.
You know, Baseball America, I just got the handbook in the other day, and they graded out his defense ahead of the hit tool, which I found interesting, but after thinking about it, it might not be all that wrong. He's, you know, getting to watch him. I got to watch him on TV for the first time last year. I'd seen him in person, but I watched him on TV when I watched Eduardo Rodriguez's first start in Portland on Nesson. And I couldn't watch Rodriguez because I was so mesmerized by Swihart's receiving. You know, it was – no, seriously. I was trying to pay attention to what they had in Rodriguez here, and I'm just like, wow, he just – you know, he's not Vasquez, which is part of why his defense will probably go underappreciated, even at the major league level.
Yeah.
But he's a very good receiver. He's got a very good arm. You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he did a very good job throwing out base stealers last year. The defense for a guy who hadn't caught much when they drafted him, his defensive development has gone about as well as you would hope for this year. Maybe you polish that off with him learning how to call a game, because I'm not sure he called his own games in Portland last year. I think they called games for him.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but I believe that's the case.
That's what I've heard of.
Right. So he's going to have to learn how to call a game this year. And I mean, my gosh, what a triple A rotation he's going to get to do that with between,
yeah,
I mean, Barnes, Owens, Johnson, Rodriguez, Edwin Escobar, Stephen Wright, all potentially in AAA. Although I guess, I mean, calling a game for Stephen Wright is a whole other animal as a knuckleballer. But
that's right.
Hey, I mean,
knuckleball,
good experience.
All right.
Yeah. Keep throwing, you know, whatever the knuckleball. I mean, with a knuckleballer, does one become the knuckleball? That seems like it would be the most efficient. Anyway. But, yeah, I mean, I think Swihart will live up to the hype in total, but I don't think he's going to necessarily be this, like, number three in the order thumper type guy. I think I could see him with more of a Veritek type bat, where he's a strong part of your core, but not necessarily the guy you're hitting cleanup every day.
Yeah,
so
that's funny. That's the, I mean, he's not as big as Veritek, but that's the guy I was going to comp him to. That yeah. you kind
it's
of
a completely different body type.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah.
You know, an above average hitter, you know, and when you add the catcher component to that, you've got, you know, a borderline all-star, a guy who's going to, you know, get MVP votes, you know, in his best years.
Mm-hmm.
Not every season, certainly, but in his best years. Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly excited to have. I mean, it's sort of an embarrassment of riches at this point at the catcher position, which, you know, which is certainly nice given the state of catching in you know at the major league level.
Oh yeah.
So then this brings me to the worst possible question I could ask you, Chris, and I apologize 1,000 times, but would you trade Swihart for Cole Hamels?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I said this, so it's kind of funny. I got into like a Twitter flame war with the internet yesterday.
Philly's Twitter is very adamant that that's a more than fair trade. And, you know, not to put words in anyone's mouth, but the fact that it hasn't happened, clearly there's some disagreement. So.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Here's my take on it. It's a take that a lot of people had. So, you know, the fact that I'm agreeing with people doesn't mean I'm copying them. But I think the Phillies are absolutely right to ask for Swihart. Mm-hmm. If the Red Sox had Cole Hamels and were looking to trade him, we would want them to ask for Blake Swihart.
Right.
The Sox are absolutely right to tell the Phillies to take a hike.
Yeah.
Because they don't need Hamels that bad. You know, on that deal, which part of why I think people took a comment I made about Hamels' contract, I don't think is that bad. He's in the next 5 years, he's going to make $10 million more than John Lester will, and Hamels is like 3 weeks older than Lester.
Yeah, right.
But it's basically a comparable contract to the Lester deal. Now, it's not the same because Lester would have signed for money, and Hamels you are trading prospects for.
Right.
And that's right. Okay. So it's I'm not saying it's the same. But the reason you don't trade Swihart isn't because Hamels' contract is unreasonable. The reason you don't trade Swihart is because you don't need Hamels that bad, and it's not like Hamels is on some crazy team-friendly deal. You know, he's right. Making market.
Right.
If I'm the Phillies, I don't know that I take the package back that's, you know, the Henry Owens plus Devin Marrero plus,
yeah. Right.
You know, pick two from column C and two from column D
right.
trade. But,
well, that's what you know, Peter Abraham suggested. I think he wrote an article at the Globe, which, you know, didn't. I thought it was perfectly fine. I mean, you know, he presented his opinion about it, and that's fine. And he suggested, I think, Owens and Margot and I don't know, Brian Johnson and, you know, like you said, someone else from here and someone else from there. And I don't know, at a certain point, it kind of becomes like, and I can see why Phillies fans would get upset about that, you know?
Sure.
I think there is a, yeah, because let me finish my thought there. Because it is sort of like, well, we'll give you a bunch of guys who aren't really that good for your best player.
Yeah. And I think it's part of, you know, it's the fantasy baseball trade syndrome
mm-hmm.
is the way I put it. It's like, you know, the quantity over quantity deal, which like in major league, in real life trades, you know, two dimes and a nickel don't necessarily get you a quarter.
Right.
You know, because the thing is having the quarter means that the two slots the other two coins were in can also be filled with other coins.
Exactly.
You know, it's not that simple. If you're going to go with the poo-poo play, matter, you have to overpay, and I don't think that there are enough, you know, there aren't enough apples in the poo-poo platter to go get them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love the poo-poo platter reference.
Yeah. I think I took that analogy past its logical endpoint.
Nope. Egg roll welcome anytime, any place on my podcast. It's I'm a big poo-poo platter fan. In any case,
yeah.
We'll try to work it in a little bit. But I think I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that deal that Peter Abraham proposed. And I don't, you know, I think those players could very well end up being good major leaguers, and some of them could be above average major leaguers. And you know, the Phillies are not going to win anything this year, and they're probably not going to win anything next year. And the chances of them winning something 3 years from now are certainly better, but I wouldn't say that they're good. And at that point, you're paying Hamels $22 million plus a $20 million option, and he's 36 or whatever. So sure, he could be around for for the next good Phillies team, but I think if you look at the numbers, if you look at the history of starting pitchers, there's a really good shot that he's not he's not that great at that point, and or he's hurt.
Sure.
And that's sort of one of the things that gives me pause about acquiring Hamels for anybody. You want to go out and you want to get a good pitcher. But this sort of brings up, this pushes us towards the major league roster. And I really did want to talk minors with you, but
it's all good.
The sort of fear and danger of paying free agent prices for a starting pitcher. So if you don't go after Hamels, next year the Red Sox are going to have whatever it is, 2, 3, 4 spots in the rotation open. And you're going to, we're going to have this whole debate all over again. And there's going to be guys like, Cueto and Samardzija and Zimmerman out there on the market who are going to want deals like, somewhere around what Hamels makes, somewhere around what Lester makes. And the Red Sox have shown no inclination to accommodate those kind of deals, for better or worse. I don't know what the answer is other than to bring your own guys up through the system. Now I figured out a way to bring it back to the minors. I'm so proud of myself.
Good work.
Do the Red Sox have anybody who can step into the front of a rotation in that time frame, in the next 1 to 2 years, anywhere in the system, do you think?
I don't know about the front of a rotation. The fact that their best pitching prospects, for the most part, minus a couple of exceptions down in, rookie ball or maybe single A this year, are all going to be triple A this year. I look at kind of the Owens, Johnson, Rodriguez trio.
Yeah,
and maybe add Matt Barnes to it as well. If the way his curveball came on late last year is for real, he's a starting pitcher. Those four guys, and I hate saying it like this because this isn't necessarily how it works. People seem to think like, oh, if you get enough C prospects, one of them because of the odds will turn into a stud. No, it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. But you would think between those four, you can get one or two major league starting pitchers, at least mid-rotation type guys. Guys like the players that they have in the majors right now, the Porcello, Masterson, Miley, Buchholz type tier, although Buchholz is an other animal.
Yeah.
But, the guys that, when they are on your roster, you can put them into the rotation in pen so long as they are healthy. Owens is a guy that knows how to pitch. He's competitive. He's got good stuff, not great stuff, but good stuff. He knows how to use it. He'll have some learning to do at AAA this year. Johnson and Rodriguez got one playoff game each in AAA last year, I think. So they'll probably start at AAA this year. I could see them in theory, getting spot starts this year as well. Barnes and Rodriguez of the four of them are the two that are on the 40-man roster. So in theory, they would be the first ones to get shots at spot starts should the need arise early in the year. I don't think you'd see Owens or Johnson until later in the year just because it's kind of useless to make room on the 40 for one of those two when you've already got Barnes and Rodriguez in the on the 40-man already, and Stephen Wright and Edwin Escobar as well, to be frank. But you would think between, say, those six guys, you're going to get at least a couple of starting pitchers that, you can write in pen in the rotation. I don't know that any of them are the, quote, front of rotation guy, but who knows? I think Ben Charrington and is looking to be opportunistic in terms of getting that front of the rotation type guy, whether it's by trade or signing a guy maybe in another market than we had this year. It's not like they didn't try to sign John Lester, but they wanted to sign him on their terms, which I get. You know, they set their price. He went for a lot more than that. Tip your cap to the Cubs. So, you know, they've definitely shown a willingness to try and get a guy like that. So we'll see what happens at the deadline this year. We'll see what happens next year. But I don't think the answer is in the system necessarily. If beyond them, you know, you have to really look to A-ball. You know, there's going to be not much in the way of starting pitching prospects in Portland this year. Portland itself is going to be kind of a black hole prospectum, save for when Margot probably gets called up midseason. But there's kind of a bubble in the Red Sox system that's going to rise to Portland this year. But there's Portland, you know, in Salem, maybe you'll have Ball there. We'll see how his development continues. And in Greenville, you'll have Michael Kopech, who we really like. I think we're higher on him than most. We've got him in our top 10 in the system right now, and I think we might be the only ones who do. Don't quote me on that. But, you know, but again, they're so far off. I mean, you're talking, you know, if Ball advances at a level a year and they start him in Salem this year, which isn't a sure thing, he's ready in 3.5 years, right? 4 years. So, yeah. You know, you've got kind of that crew that's in AAA right now, but I don't think any of them are going to, you know, there's no Madison Bumgarner, Clayton Kershaw type guy in there now, I don't think. And that's fine. There's only so many teams that have that.
Yeah.
So it's not like that makes the system deficient. There's a reason those guys are special, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. As far as I'm aware, there's only, you know, one Clayton Kershaw. That's it.
Right.
There's Clayton Kershaw, and then there's like several open slots, and then there's everybody else. At least, you know, going off what happened last year and the year before.
Right.
So looking at your guys' top 10 right now, you have Swihart, Owens, Manuel Margot, Devers, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brian Johnson, Matt Barnes, Michael Chavis, Garen Caccini, and Michael Kopech. That's the top 10. Now, you guys have Margot number 3. That's very high compared to Baseball America, which has him at 7. I don't know. Maybe that's not.
They do. For what it's worth, they also ranked Rusne Castillo. So it's really
true,
like having him at 6.
They have Rusne Castillo 3, actually. So you're right. So it is like having 6. So maybe it's not as big a difference as I outlined. But as far as relatively big time Red Sox prospects goes, I think Margot is the guy I know the least about. Can you enlighten me as to what he's good at, what he needs to work on, where he is in his development?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, that's part of the A-ball teams being in Virginia and South Carolina is that it seems like guys kind of go into this hearing about them black hole and after Lowell, and then we don't hear about them again until they're in Portland. you know, so then that's kind of what's happened with Margot, right? But if I could just throw in a quick about the ranking part.
Sure.
To me, you've got a clear number 1 in Swihart in the system and a relatively clear number 2 in Owens. And then to me, Margot, Devers, Rodriguez, and Johnson kind of form the next tier.
Okay.
So I honestly don't think our rankings differ too much from, say, BAs or BPs too, even though I think they have maybe Johnson a little lower. In that, you know, if you came to me and said, hey, I've got Rodriguez 3, I'd be like, yeah, you know, on the right day, maybe I would too.
Yeah.
You know, to me, Margot, Devers, Rodriguez in particular is kind of a depends what you like in a prospect, you know, just because they're so hard to compare at that level. So, you know, yeah, I think we do have him technically ranked higher than most do, but I don't think that's us trying to make a statement or anything. I think that's just kind of how we ranked them at the end of the last year. We haven't really had reason to mess with it. But, you know, going on to Margot, super athletic body type, generates great bat speed, really can, you know, for a guy who steals a lot of bags and who plays great outfield, you know, Margot stole 42 bases last year. In, you know, 115 games. So, you know, he's very fast. He plays a very good center field. He's got some range out there, has an idea how to go pick it. You know, he's not the type of guy that's making up for reads with speed. He, you know, he is rangy and he, you know, has a good first step. But at the plate, he's one of those, you know, the ball sounds different off the bat guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, this past year, let's look at it this way. 2013 in Lowell, he had one home run in 49 games. And I honestly, I think that might have been inside the park, if I remember correctly. you know, hashtag New York Penn League.
Right.
But, you know, so, but this year in, you know, the 115 games, he hit 12. So it was part, and he had 25 doubles after hitting ace last year in the New York Penn League. So, you know, at age 19, he was starting to tap into that power, starting to drive the ball the way that you could project him doing when you saw him in BP or when you saw him down in training or instructs. And, you know, all of a sudden the sound from field three changed. You looked over and it was Margot.
Yeah.
But he could put a charge into the ball. You know, BA did a list recently of like the top power speed combination guys in the minors or something to that, or it might have even been power along with not swinging bad pitches or something. I don't remember. And he was on there. You know, he's also got an idea of what he's doing out there. He's not a guy that strikes out a ton. He only struck out 54 times last year in 430 at bats. So he's not a guy that's up there. You know, he kind of knows what he's doing up there. Doesn't swing at terrible pitches. He needs to work a little bit maybe on pitch recognition. And he does get aggressive. I shouldn't say he's not aggressive. He is aggressive. He likes to attack the ball. Maybe can tone that down a bit, but he also doesn't want to completely pull a guy back if that's his, you know, plan at the plate, as long as he's not getting himself out, which he doesn't really do. The numbers don't look as great because he really kind of came on later. The first half of the year, he was just kind of in that good numbers for a kid who's 19 in the Sally League zone, so to speak, where the numbers don't jump off the page at you until you look at how old he is. And you're like, oh, okay, that could be something. And then he just got super hot at some point in July and got a promotion to Salem. And then in Salem, he had 340 with, you know, two bombs and 50 at-bats, you know, as a 19-year-old in the Carolina League, which is a black hole for power. You know, plugged 560. So
wow.
I like him as a good all-around prospect, very athletic, you know, needs to continue to develop a play. Like I said, maybe pull back on the aggressiveness, work the pitch recognition. But part of the reason we have him at three is I remember kind of pumping him a little bit, him and Devers, at some point midseason, just being like, these two guys are guys that we need to kind of get on because they're, you know, I could see Margot being a guy that makes a big jump this year on the top 100 lists, as well as Devers. Those are two guys that could really, if numbers pop this year like they could, you know, kind of put themselves on the national radar. They're kind of lurking, so to speak, in that sense, where they're on the radar for the team, but not necessarily on that national spotlight yet.
Devers is a guy who I'm extremely excited about. I mean, I know he's only, what is he, 18? But it's not often that you find a guy who has the power that he has and translates it to games at his age. It sounds silly to say because he's 18 and he could become nothing, but as a fan anyway, not as a scouting director or as a general manager, which I'm fortunately neither, but as a fan, he's a guy I wouldn't want to trade at all. I'm very excited to see him, you know, go up through the system and see what he can do in Boston. I mean, he's sort of like the.
I had a similar thought today of the non-Swihart group, he's the guy that I would be most loath to trade in the system right now.
Yeah.
Just because of what he could become.
Right.
He's the first guy they've had since maybe Westmoreland or maybe Hanley, who you look at him and you say, this player could become an offensive force.
Yeah.
Like, you know, no doubt number three or four hitter in your lineup.
Yeah.
He could move to first base and it won't matter,
right,
which is not something that you say about a lot of guys. You know, it's, you know, Swihart's bat is very good and could be very good because he's a catcher.
Right.
You know, if you put that bat at first base, it's ordinary. Devers' bat at first base, if it comes out like it's supposed to, like it projects, he'll be fine. I think he led both the DSL and GCL in homers this year.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, or at least his teams. I think it might have just been his teams that he led in home runs.
Well, either way.
And this playing half a season at each level.
Right.
Which is crazy. I guess I heard from talking with one of the Red Sox beat writers that when Xander Bogaerts got told that Devers hit 3 home runs in however many games, he was down there for 28 games, Devers this year, he just responded with kind of like, wait, what? That's no. And apparently he had his first home run of the year, Oppo, as a 17-year-old in the Dominican Summer League, which is just stupid. That's stupid.
Right.
Like, that, you don't do that.
No.
You know, and I remember I went to Instrux back in 2013, and he was a guy that, you know, you see kind of, you know, the trainer talking to his trainer friend on the other team that the minor leaguers are playing, and they're whispering. And Devers was the guy they're whispering about. You know, it'd be like, no, when this guy comes up, watch him. Watch what he does. You know. And at the same time, you know, he also looked kind of silly against some breaking pitches, not because he couldn't recognize it, but because he was 17,
right,
facing LA guys, you know, or 16 or however old he was in Instrux at that point. So I would love if they sent him to Greenville, but the crazy thing is he's so young they don't have to.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a positive development year for him this year that involves him not making it to Greenville, which is kind of crazy to think about. That said, I think he will at some point because the bat's just too good. But if they wanted to hold him back to make sure he gets the reps at third base with Michael Chavis, maybe getting the reps at third in Greenville or something, which that development path is going to be interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's interesting to look at the major league level and go how, you know, and think how that impacts where guys play in the minor leagues, right? I mean, I know, you know, at AAA, you see guys try new positions because they're being sort of, you know, set up to help the major league roster. But, you know, down in the Gulf Coast League or whatever, you don't see that kind of thing. Guys play, you know, usually they put them, I guess, at their max, you know, position on the defensive spectrum, move them, you know, challenge them as much as they can, and then prove them, you know, that they can't play the position and then move them when they need to. But, you know, a guy like Devers, who, I mean, you know, he could have a bad year and then we'll just be like, bleh. But right now is just so exciting. You kind of wonder, because like, you know, they've locked up left field and the, you know, the entire left side of the field is covered for the next 4 seasons, possibly 5. Now, you know, like you said, he's 18, so that may not matter. You know, and the first base is open, et cetera. But, you know, how does that impact like the guy, you know, the long-term commitments of the major league roster? How does that impact a guy like Devers and more broadly the Red Sox mid and lower minor league systems?
Yeah, I with the Red Sox at least is the team I can only really speak to because of my familiarity. But
still,
you don't
now, so you're fine.
Yeah, good. But they don't move guys until AA the earliest. You know, you could look at, say, Mookie Betts this year as the prime example of guy who plays a position that there is no chance that he will play in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you move him? I think that's as textbook as an example as you're going to get. You know, basically around Memorial Day, I think it was, they started, or a little bit before Memorial Day, they moved him to the outfield. So with Devers, I mean, he'll stick at third until they think he needs to move off of it, which may or may not happen. He's not a butcher there. He made a lot of errors this year, but when you see him, he's got, you know, the instant. He's got the hands. He can play there. He looked like a 17-year-old playing professional baseball, you know, and that's, he made errors, but at his age, he's supposed to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you see things. I mean, I remember the one time I've been to the Gulf Coast League, the Red Sox had this super young infield at second, short, and third. And then they had, I think Jake Davies or something his name was at first base, who was this, like, senior college draftee out of Georgia Tech, who was clearly an org guy but could pick it.
Yeah.
And you look at it and you're like, if they had some, you know, regular, even, you know, average first baseman over there, each of these guys would have, like, another error every three games. Because the guy's picking balls left and right, and they're learning, you know?
Right.
So that's part of why I kind of ignore error totals until you get up to, like, double A or triple A. Because, you know, with the guys you're playing with, you could just be playing with a terrible first baseman who won't save you at all, you know, in terms of your, you know, your throwing errors, right? Or you could be playing on a terrible infield and, you know, in say the Carolina League or something. But they'll leave them there. But, and on the other hand, they don't leave guys at positions if they know they're not going to stay there. You know, for example, Michael Chavis, the first round pick last year, he was a shortstop in high school. He played a little bit of shortstop. He played shortstop after they drafted him, but at some point he basically started platooning with Devers at third base in the Gulf Coast League. And they moved, and they basically started giving Javier Guerra, who might be the most underrated guy in the system, all the reps at short, because it was just kind of like, why leave Chavis at short if it's not going to happen? You know, they drafted Will Middlebrooks as a shortstop, and I don't think he played an inning there as a professional.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things where you leave a guy there until he shows you he can't, and sometimes that happens down there, but they're definitely not going to move him because of what's going on in the majors until that's a problem they really have to deal with. Because the other thing, too, is you could just wind up casing him for a trade. You know, it could be a situation where you move a guy off of third base to first base in the minors, and then some team that needs a third baseman 2 years, 3 years down the road doesn't think of that guy because they haven't seen him play there. So,
yeah, exactly. You know, no reason to devalue your own assets, you know.
Exactly.
If I can switch topics, I guess, there's a couple things that I wanted to hit with you, Chris, and we're coming up on an hour already. It's just a pleasure speaking with you, so it flies by.
Oh, you're so nice.
Well, it's true. But in any case, there's two things I wanted to hit before I let you go and get ready for Florida. One is Moncada. And the other is the Red Sox have the 7th pick in the draft this coming season, and I know nothing about that other than...
Makes two of us.
Yeah.
Two of us.
So, okay. Well, maybe we'll just skip right over that then. Are you well versed at all in Moncada? In Yoan Moncada is a free agent for, I guess he's a shortstop, but I don't know if people are sure that he's going to stay there or not. From Cuba, you know, he's supposedly an offensive powerhouse who can play, you know, middle infield. He's 19.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And, yeah, he's a free agent, and so, you know, he's going to sign with somebody, and by doing so, I'm not telling you this, Chris, I'm telling the listeners this. I know you know this stuff. By signing with somebody, he's going to cost so much, he's going to blow through the international bonus limit, and he's going to and by doing that, the team is going to put themselves in a penalty situation where they have to pay both the tax, a dollar for dollar tax on everything they spent over the bonus level. And they'll also not be able to sign any international free agents, I think under 23, over the next 2 years for anything over $300,000. So basically anybody who's extraordinarily good, likely won't sign with you if you blow through this. The thing is, the Red Sox have already blown through this, so that penalty has already been incurred. So we're just talking about a money situation here. Are you well versed in Moncada and where he fits? Do you think the Red Sox are a team that could? Is there any reason for them to spend $80 million on this guy?
Sure, because all it is money, you know, like, and which is so easy to say if you're not John Henry, but, you know, when you can get down like that for nothing but money, you do it. It's basically kind of the you know, analog that we've seen is that, you know, if, say, take token, you know, young player of that age, like, say, I don't know, Byron Buxton was a free agent right now.
Right.
You know, what would he fetch on the open market? You know, so there's a reason that you don't really see that with U.S. guys is because that the draft exists to keep down costs, basically it tamps down the market for those guys. As far as Moncada, you know, defensively, I've seen that he will likely play either second or third,
mm-hmm.
but I've seen center field tossed around as a possibility for him on the right team.
Okay.
He's a guy who, you know, he's going to need time in the minors. You know, people seem to be talking about him like he's immediately going to play in the majors. I think he would go to either high A or double A, I believe,
mm-hmm.
After he signed, and probably need a year or so, maybe a couple of years before you think about calling him up. You know, there's no need to rush him. You look at Jorge Soler, who needed, I think, two or three years.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the comp, really, in terms of how long it would take him to get ready. But Moncada, you know, switch hitter, you know, good stick. I mean, that's the plus side there. He's, you know, the best Cuban to come out in a while. They've said, I mean, you know, it's a different situation when you have like an Abreu, Jose Abreu, who comes out, you know, a major leaguer. But, you know, a better sign than Rusne Castillo, for example, you know, or the, you know, Yasmani Tomas, who signed recently. If I'm the Red Sox, I'm going after him hard because, like you said, they've already gone over their bonus limit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for reference, the highest bonus pool in the current signing period, which is the July 2nd through, I think, end of May or something, and then there's like a dead period, was the Astros, and their bonus pool was $5
million. Right.
And Moncada, they're saying, which, by the way, this is based on nothing,
right.
based on what
yes.
I've seen,
yes.
it's kind of estimation. So who the heck? It could be way low, it could be way high.
Yeah.
But 30 or 40 million himself
yeah.
is what he's going to get.
Right.
So basically, you wind up doubling it.
Yeah, right.
You wind up doubling it because you're going to pay a dollar for dollar tax over your bonus pool,
which is
why the Red Sox are. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
But the Red Sox are a great landing spot for him because they have already gone over their pool, like you've said. So they already have incurred penalties for next year. So now there's no downside in that sense to signing him.
Yeah.
And, you know, dollar for dollar, they're one of the teams with the finances that can handle that dollar for dollar penalty. You know, just handing $40 million to Major League Baseball. Basically.
Right.
And the thing is, for teams that have not gone over their signing pool, I've seen this, Ben Badler from Baseball America made this point, I think, of there are, you know, the guys that sign on July 2nd in a new signing period, it's not like, you know, basketball recruiting where all of a sudden their phones are ringing off the hook at midnight or something.
Right.
Or maybe there's a better analogy, like NBA free agency, I think is like that, where guys get called at midnight or something.
Yeah.
These guys have deals with teams in place, verbal agreements. So there's a calculation for a team that hasn't gone over its pool yet that maybe has some guys they want to sign next year of, do we want to now break these verbal agreements we have?
Right.
And maybe hurt our goodwill in these countries, which is a thing. It's absolutely a thing. There are plenty of players over the years who've signed with the Red Sox and taken less money because they wanted to sign with the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think Xander Bogaerts might have been one of the guys that took less money to sign with the Red Sox.
Well, they signed his brother as well, and I believe he
right.
Yeah, he took a pretty small right exactly. Yeah, he took a pretty small bonus comparatively. I think it was over $300,000, yep. but not by much.
170 is popping into my head, and that could just be for no reason at all.
Okay.
But these are the random things that fill my head instead of more useful facts,
right.
like you know how to do my job or things like that. But, actually I can bring it up right here, but I want to be right so bad on this. 180 almost. Anyway.
Oh, so it was over 300,000.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, Bogaerts. I mean, the thing is at that point in time, the 300,000 was not,
it was less.
You know, a noteworthy number, you know, because there was no cap then, but you know, so with Moncada, the Red Sox are in a great position because they don't have to worry about breaking deals with players for next year because they don't have any, because they're not signing anyone over $300,000 next year anyway.
Right.
But that said, the team that I think a lot of people see as the favorite right now, the Yankees, have also gone over their signing bonus pool
yeah.
for this year as well. So you know, there's a lot of incentive for them to go after him. There's a certain element of them needing him a little more because their system isn't quite as strong.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe does that make them a little more willing to go higher? The Dodgers said they're interested, and, you know, they've got more money than God.
But they're not over. That's the thing. So if they go over,
no,
yeah, signing him would put them over is the point.
Yes, it would. Yeah, I mean, it's going to put anybody over, but, you know, that's why teams that are already over have an advantage, because there isn't that kind of calculus of are we breaking verbal agreements for next year.
Right. Exactly.
So if I'm the Red Sox, I'm going in hard. I mean, you have to put a limit on it just based on prudence, you know, business principles. But, you know, I'm going in hard and making it very hard to outbid my team if I'm, you know, Ben Cherington or Eddie Romero. So it's, you know, I hope they sign him, because he's a guy that I think comes in and might immediately be the top prospect system. Mm-hmm. I might put him ahead of Swihart immediately.
That was my next question.
Yeah, I think I would. You know, he's a guy that if he were draft eligible would go one, no question, is what I've been reading.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think was it Mark that tweeted the photo of Moncada the other day? He just looked ripped. He was wearing, like, you know, the white long sleeve Under Armour.
Right.
And it's just like chiseled from stone.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, granted, he's been doing nothing but training for months.
Right.
So you would hope he looks like that. But, I mean, my gosh, if I look like that as a 19-year-old, if only.
Right.
But, yeah. Which, you know, hey, we're fawning over the physique of a 19-year-old Cuban, which is also a little weird, but
well, scouting is in that sense, I guess. That's the way that works. But
some are weirder about it than others, but
that's right. are you familiar at all with the current draft eligible pool for this coming amateur draft where the Red Sox pick seventh? I don't know college ball, so I don't know anything about it.
If you give me a second, I think I may have notes somewhere from a podcast we did. Like,
no, it's okay. It's there are other things to discuss. I don't need to force you into a discussion of something you're unprepared for.
It's not off the top of my head. I know. Baseball America broke kind of a preview of it. But that said, the thing is, these things change so much over the course of the spring. I mean, I remember last year at this time, the debate was whether Carlos Rodon or Jeff Hoffman of East Carolina was going to be the number one pick overall.
And that it was like... ended up needing Tommy John, right?
Yeah, Hoffman winded up needing Tommy John, and Rodon looked human during the season for NC State, so he wound up going, what, did he go second or did he go a little later than that? I know the White Sox picked him. I forget where they picked.
Yeah, second
but,
or third, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he went early. Like, he didn't fall that far, but, you know, coming in, you would have thought he was the second coming of Strasburg.
Right.
So, you know, these things change so much. I mean, look at Anthony Renato. Anthony Renato, honestly, Devin Marrero is another example of this. Anthony Renato, heading into his junior year, was one of the top three draft prospects, and he fell to, what, 55? And then Devin Marrero, heading into his junior year, was, I think, at least the top half of the first-round draft prospect, and he fell to the Red Sox in the 20s. So,
Jackie,
you know, these things are so...
Right? Wasn't Jackie Bradley with the same sort of deal? Maybe he wasn't.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Jackie.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Jackie Bradley, yeah, same thing. He got hurt his junior year, and he fell to 44, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have time to go through that, you know, the whole, oh, yay, we got the seventh pick in the draft thing.
Yeah, I mean, just as a rule, I try not to even look at it too much at this time of year, because it's just, it's almost a waste of time.
Yeah, yeah. Now, so you're hearing, I think, Chris, what I'm hearing, which is that the lady comes on and tells you how much time there's left in the recording. But I've learned that if you ignore her and you just continue on, then you get to keep recording.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So she's going to start like counting down at a certain point. And the listeners can't hear any of
it. Nice.
I know. It's
soothing.
It's actually very relaxing listening to her. It should be stressful, but I find it to be like she's going to. Oh, no, she didn't say 30 seconds. All right, anyway. But So I'm gonna blow past this, but at the same time, I'm also gonna let you go and go get ready for your Florida trip. And
for sure.
I very much appreciate you running in the door and hopping on the phone with me and talking about the Sox. Hopefully we can get this going again. Maybe when things start going, with the minor league system, sometime in I don't know, May or June, whatever things get interesting and you know, we get some promotions and some guys are exceeding expectations, and we can chat about that. So if you're up for that, I'll bug you around then.
Always, yeah. And I mean, if I could just mention we're sending our crew down to Fort Myers the week of March 17th through the 22nd. So that week we're going to have a lot of stuff on the news page from spring training. We're bringing a crew of like 6 people down, I think. I'm unfortunately going to be in town for a couple of days because, first year law associate problems, but, first year law associate problems, people who don't have enough money to buy longer trips because they're getting married. But, hey, first world problems. But
I know, right? Well, congratulations. We're going to have that's pretty cool. Thanks. Where are the other?
Well, that's the new thing now, to be a Red Sox fan who writes about baseball, who occasionally watches wrestling and gets engaged, apparently.
Copycat.
Everybody's doing it.
That's right.
So we're going to have a lot of good stuff that week. We're kind of going to start ramping up our season preview stuff here soon. I'm actually going to be working on things on the plane, scheduling that stuff. So we're going to have a lot of good content on the website coming up. So hopefully it doesn't suck.
No, I'm sure it won't.
But yeah, I'm pumped for this season. It's going to be intriguing because they have a lot of guys who, there's a lot of variability to at a lot of levels, other than Portland. Portland's going to be terrible.
Well, I mean, just in the majors, it's going to be really interesting. It could go in any number of directions. I think, speaking earlier about my susceptibility to marketing, the giant brouhaha about let's load some garbage into a truck and drive it down I-95, and everyone's like, woo! And I'm one of those people. I'm like, truck day, yeah!
Yeah. I went through a phase where I was really cynical about it, and then I was just like, it's people being excited about baseball, man. It's really what I want to waste my time being mad about. I think it's hilarious that there's a sponsor now. Like it's JetBlue or something, Truck Day presented by.
Right.
I think it is JetBlue because it's JetBlue Park down in Florida.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because I've just seen that logo. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, wow. Okay, good for the Red Sox for getting a sponsorship.
Hey, if they can, put JetBlue's logo up on the side of a truck and make enough money that they can sign Hanley Ramirez, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Do it, man. It's. Hope springs eternal, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just excited to get things ramped up. And with the Major League team, honestly, I said this in an email to a family member today, they could be great and they could be terrible.
Yeah.
And nothing would surprise me, which I think is great. I love it.
Yeah, it's really makes it a lot. I agree. I mean, I could see 70 wins and I could see 90 wins. I think there's a lot of variability, up and down the lineup for sure. I'm sure – if anybody listens to this podcast, they also listen to your podcast because your podcast is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of it. Whenever you guys have a new podcast and it shows up in my iTunes, I always do like a little dance.
Film that for me somewhere.
But on the off chance that you don't know where to find Chris's podcast, you can go to SoxProspects.com. I'll try that again, SoxProspects.com. And you can also search in the iTunes, and it will show up, and you should definitely listen to that. Tons and tons of good information on the minor league system. And in the last couple of years, boy, has that been worth paying attention to, my gosh. Chris does an amazing job, and, now his former compatriot, Chris Mellon, is now, running the show with the prospects over at Baseball Prospectus. So, I hear my kids. They're coming. There's going to be noise in a second. But
nice. Nice.
Hey, guys, why don't you go get a book, okay? We'll read some stories.
Why did you say box?
I'm still finishing up talking here, so I'll be with you in a sec. Anyway.
awesome.
But yeah, so we'll reconvene this later. You guys should all follow Chris on the Twitter. He's at SP Chris Hatfield. Just a second, 3P. Just a second. And this is my son Wyatt here. And you can follow me on Twitter too. But there's really no reason to bother with that. And yeah, thanks for.
Oh no! Throw it out there. Don't do that. Say it.
It's at Maddie.
Maddie 2000.
Yeah.
Right.
Daddy.
What, sweetie?
Is there something on your computer?
There is. Yep. Just a second. I'll be done in a sec. Okay.
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 He's talking to a guy in the computer.
That's right. Yeah. That's my friend Chris.
Are you in headphones or am I on speaker?
So. Yeah, so check out Chris on the Twitter. Check him out on SoxProspects.com. And Chris, many thanks for spending your packing time talking Red Sox prospects.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, no problem. Anytime. And we're gonna have to get you on our show soon. I think we're gonna ramp it back up here. I think in a couple of weeks. So I know we haven't had an episode in a while, but I think like around the end of the month of February, we're gonna get back into it.
Sounds good.
We'll be in touch.
Alrighty. So this has been the Over the Monster podcast. I think we're at episode 120. That's what I'm writing. I don't know. Whatever. I lost track. But yeah, we'll get back into this in probably a week or two when spring training gets going. So we'll talk to you all then. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.